From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. It's Politics Day here on The Exchange. Of course, there were yesterday's primaries. We'll dissect what happened there and ask what it says about the Tea Party's strength and the strength of the incumbency. Plenty of other things on the political landscape to chew over this hour as well. Terry Branstad's plan for economic development in Iowa, the ongoing mosque controversy, the political implications of the new stem cell ruling, and your questions for our guests, New Hampshire political analyst Arnie Arneson and political communication analyst Bruce Gronbeck. Politics Day on The Exchange gets started right after this news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and it's Politics Day once again here, Wednesday on The Exchange, a chance to get some analysis from recent state and national political news, and a chance for you to let us know what's on your mind. Of course, we want to discuss yesterday's primaries a little later in the program. Plenty of other things on the political landscape to chew over this hour as well. The ongoing mosque controversy actually coming to Iowa. We'll talk about that in a second. Terry Branstad's plan for economic development in Iowa. Maybe the political implications of the new stem cell ruling. What about this egg recall? What fallout politically will arise from that? Listeners, we'd like to have you join our conversation. What's on your political mind? 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Twitter. Give us a tweet at IPR Talk. Joining us this week, political communication analyst Bruce Gronbeck from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Iowa City. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
And also joining us by phone, New Hampshire political analyst Arnie Arneson. Good afternoon to you, Arnie.
Good afternoon to you. Too bad you can't read my lips. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Kim Lehman's line, not
mine. We'll let that be a mystery to our listeners who don't know the reference until we get a little further into our conversation. But let's dive right into it. So we do get up to that. The controversy over the plans to build a Muslim community center a few blocks from Ground Zero, continuing to color political discussion across the country. Also here in Iowa, in fact, there's an ad running on local TV in Iowa that uses the heated debate to attack Democratic Congressman Bruce Braley of Iowa's 1st District. It's paid for by the conservative advocacy group based in Des Moines called the American Future Fund. Here's the audio from it.
For centuries, Muslims built mosques where they won military victories. Now they want to build a mosque at Ground Zero, where Islamic terrorists killed 3,000 Americans. It's like the Japanese building at Pearl Harbor. The Muslim cleric building the mosque believes America was partly responsible for 9/11 and is raising millions overseas from secret donors. But incredibly, Bruce Braley supports building a mosque at Ground Zero. Tell Braley what you think.
That's an ad by the conservative advocacy group based in Des Moines, the American Future Fund, the name of that group, running on television, local television in Iowa. Bruce Gronbeck, what do you think of this attack ad using this fiery controversy here locally in a congressional race?
Well, you use what you can, and if you're behind, you use a lot of attack ads and fear appeals, and this is set up in a pretty classic sort of way. If you listen to the background, slow, muted drumbeat and rhythm behind it, the husky voice of a man deeply, deeply concerned about the issue and the fate of the whole country, even as it is affected by eastern Iowa. I think it's a pretty classic sort of attack that has been part of the whole buildup over the last 2 weeks. The same kind of appeals are working their way along. I mean, this gets extended in a lot of different ways. But go ahead, Arnie.
What's your read on it, Arnie?
Well, actually, I'm trying to figure out what's accurate in that statement. In the ad that you just ran, what's accurate? First of all, it's not on Ground Zero. It's blocks away from that. Second of all, it's not a mosque. It's a community center. Third of all, I mean, if you just go through line
a community center with a mosque in it, we presume.
Well, and at the Pentagon, they celebrate services and have the equivalent. It's not a mosque. It's a place to pray. And Muslims come to pray just the way they pray at the Pentagon. They pray at the Pentagon now. every single week. I just want folks to know that doesn't make the Pentagon a mosque, and it doesn't mean it is location for terrorists. See, that's part of the problem here, is that so much of the fiction has now become reality, and that's where it becomes very, very scary. And I sent to Bruce, and I also sent to you, Ben, this very, very funny piece. And we all know that John Stewart can be hilariously funny. But this is all about guilt by association. And you can take guilt by association in so many different directions that it ultimately may frighten you. And what he decided to do was, using the same guilt by association that turned the Qdoba Center, Park 51, into a home for terrorists, he did the exact same guilt by association, and what did he come up with? That Fox News and News Corp, owned by Rupert Murdoch, and it turns out the number two owner is a Saudi prince, and he made Fox News the home of a terrorist plot. So again, if you see the facts in isolation and you put them together in this sort of interesting but random way, you can come up with any frightening scenario, but in the end, the truth has to trump it and has to trump this. And I think that's what's so frightening here, is that misinformation has far exceeded the facts.
Okay, let's reach out to Exchange listeners and ask if this mosque controversy, the Muslim Community Center controversy, we could rename it that as well. Is it important to you? Do you think it's a political issue that's worth your time? And what it brings out about politics, the state of politics at this time? Bruce Gronbeck,
yep.
I want to get out our number one more time, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Now over to Bruce Gronbeck.
Yeah, I think, Ben, you hit the center in calling it a political controversy. It's easy to cast this somehow, right, as an interreligion, interfaith kind of fight between Christians and Muslims, refighting the battle of the West and the Mideast forever, the clash of civilizations and all that sort of thing, going back to Huntington's work on that topic. Yet it really, really is, in this country right now, a political battle, right? It is not Christians versus the Islamic followers. It's conservative versus liberals.
And who is winning here?
Right.
With this tool?
Well, at this point, I think that if you look at the public opinion polls, the conservatives are ahead, but it's not as though the call for religious diversity and tolerance led by the mayor of the city of New York, among others, to say we're building this and we're living up to our First Amendment rights, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and everything else, that we are following constitutional principles deeply embedded to which we're committed, that the struggle then is really a political struggle. In an odd sense, I think the Islamic dimension, the religious per se dimension, is a sidelight.
It's also about people's geographic and political and religious history. Barack Obama is a man who comes from many different backgrounds. He comes from a Protestant background. His father was a non-practicing Muslim. He's lived in Hawaii. He lived out, where was it, Kansas or Oregon. He's lived in Indonesia. This is a man who really represents kind of the diversity melting pot of America. Then there are places in America that have lived here since Plymouth Rock, and the only experience they have are with, you know, Protestants of the same background and history as themselves. If you go to where exactly this community center at Park 51 is, it is an incredibly diverse neighborhood. And it turns out that the community center, there was a community group, and the community group voted 29-1. This is sort of representation of that neighborhood, to support the building of the Qdoba Center, because it represents who they are. It represents the sort of incredible ethnic mix of who they are. And part of the problem is there's also a struggle. There's a struggle between people who have never had that experience and people who only live that experience of diversity and many cultures and many religions. And they see bridge building as essential to keep their neighborhood safe. And some people, like the RNC person from Iowa, who basically now is using this as an opportunity to question, you know, Barack Obama's allegiance, let alone his religious faith, is really seeing this as undermining what she sees as the Velcro that holds her community together.
Let me get our listeners up to date on that story related to this one. Iowa Republican Party leaders seem to be keeping quiet. There is a comment by Matt Strawn, the chairman of the Iowa GOP, about these comments. The party official in question, she suspects President Barack Obama is actually a Muslim, not a Christian. The president, of course, repeatedly stated he is a Christian. Kim Lehman of Des Moines, one of two Iowans in the on the Republican National Committee, began attracting national attention when she posted a Twitter message last week in response to a Politico News article. The article said that Obama, whose father is was raised a Muslim, has repeatedly found his faith questioned and has confronted the rumors head on. Now, Lehman said Thursday on her Twitter page, quote, "Politico, you're funny. They must pay you a lot to protect Obama. By the way, he personally told the Muslims that he is a Muslim. Read his lips." And in reaction to that, Matt Strawn, about the only thing we've heard from the Iowa GOP are these comments from Matt Strawn of the GOP. "The conversation over the president's religion will not put a jobless Iowan back to work. It will not improve our educational system," and so on. So what do you make of these comments by an Iowa Republican Party leader, Bruce Gronbeck?
Well, the leader, of course, is walking a line, the same kind of line that nationally Mitch McConnell walked on this same kind of issue, where he said, I take the president at his word, without saying that he would affirm that he was in fact a Christian. And this man saying, let's deflect this issue, throw it away. You guys worry about that. I want to deal with the central political issues. He would not take on Ken Lehman either. Who, by the way, based all this on, of course, the fact that Obama actually went to Egypt to give us a speech last year and talked about his background, affirming in that speech that he is a Christian, even though he has a Muslim background.
And affirming the strength of democracy, Bruce.
That's right.
I mean,
that's right.
What he was doing was he was doing outreach to a world where democracy is still an experiment that they have not necessarily embraced. And what he was saying is, look at what happens in a democracy. In a democracy, a young man whose father was a Muslim from Africa, whose mother ends up being really a single parent because he leaves very early, who comes from nothing, can rise to the occasion and become the president of the United States. Look at this diversity of background, but look at this opportunity. He said he was a Christian, and the irony here is most of us, at least I'm from the East Coast. My brother married a Jew, my mother is a Catholic, my father was a Protestant, I married an atheist. Who am I going to not embrace? I mean, that's part of the problem is how can you reject someone because they have a different faith from yours when the United States, and this is an important statistic, Ben, we have more places of worship per person in the United States than any other country in the world. Why? Because this was the place that said, come here and embrace your faith.
We have to take
not
a short break.
Not my faith, but your faith.
Arnie Arneson joining us, New Hampshire political analyst, also with political communications analyst Bruce Gronbeck for Politics Day here on The Exchange. When we come back, we'll continue with this controversy. We want to get to the calls, a lot of calls on that topic. Also, the other topics we want to cover today, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Back in 60 seconds. Back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News, chewing over political events recently, some analysis as well with Arnie Arneson, New Hampshire political analyst and political communications analyst Bruce Gronbeck. You're welcome to join our political fray here, 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. A lot of listeners want to chime in about that last comment. Let's get at least a few of them. We'll be talking about the Muslim Community Center planned to be built a few blocks on private ground near Ground Zero, continuing to color political discussion across the country, now being used as a political tool in political ads, as we heard in that attack ad on Congressman Bruce Braley of Iowa's 1st District. Let's go to Mary Kay. Good afternoon, Mary Kay.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I tell you what, this is a time to test logical and well-meaning Americans' patience. And Arnie Arneson, I cannot agree with you more. I am receiving daily from my right-wing, well-meaning friends misinformation and lies across across the ozone waves, and it's driving me crazy. People are believing what they're receiving via email, and there's a lot of McCarthyist and John Birch Society type material being swapped across the ozone waves, like I said, that is so untrue and easily disputed, or easily disproven, rather. And I'm just shocked that I am receiving emails from teachers, from people in the press who own small newspapers, who believe this stuff. What in God's name is going on that intelligent people are believing the misinformation that's being spread?
Interesting comment. Let's get reaction to that. Of course, we've seen other cases in which the truth made no difference in an election, haven't we, Bruce Gronbeck?
We have. Again, when you get tied to what some will take as a plausibility because of certain stereotypes of this world, tied together with fear, all happening in a situation of great uncertainty thanks to the economy, the first by-election after a presidential election, all those other kinds of things, all those factors come to destabilize, and so awfully wild assertions start floating around, reinforced by the sheer number of times they get reasserted on the internet. And we live in an amazing time.
Okay.
It fits into the narrative of fear. You're absolutely right, Bruce. And the numbers that just came out, for example, on housing, what was it, a 25% drop? People are they're hunkering down. They don't understand. They're looking at unemployment numbers. Look what just happened with Iowa with the egg recall. That's the bread and butter of how Iowa makes it. All these things happening simultaneously. BP, Afghanistan. I mean, you take all these things together and they prove to be almost a Molotov cocktail. And when you're frightened, what is the first thing you do? You look for someone to blame. And unfortunately, there's a group of people in this country that are experts at the blame game. And truth is expendable when you're looking to blame.
And I was interesting the comments about the politics of fear, reading Chuck Todd's column. He's quoting one observer, putting it this way: if 2008 was about hope, then 2010 might be about fear, with Republicans running on fear of Obama and the Democrats, while Democrats running on fear of returning to Bush GOP policies. Let's go to BJ, who is in, is it Neuha?
Yes, just west of Cedar Rapids.
Hi, BJ. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. One of the things I haven't heard mentioned yet is the fact that when they refer to the Americans that died in the Twin Towers, that there were Muslim Americans who died in the Twin Towers also. It is not them versus us. It is all us. Muslims are us. Christians are us. Jews are us. I don't understand why they think that all Muslims are foreigners. We're all foreigners unless your name is Young Bear.
Mm-hmm. What do you make, BJ, of this being used in the First District campaign to attack Bruce Braley, bringing an issue from New York City, undoubtedly a big issue across the country? Do you think that will find some traction or backfire because of the nature of the attack ad?
You know, I have the fear that it will have some effect because I know, like your previous caller said, I also get those emails that just nauseate me. But usually when it comes push to shove, we get to the bottom line. I have faith in Iowa voters, and just about the time I give up hope, we do something that gives me hope again.
Okay.
So I think we have intelligent people here who do think and who do talk, and I hope that the bottom line will be we will vote with our heads and our hearts in a positive way.
Okay, very good. Thank you, BJ, calling us from Newhall to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Christopher in Ames writes an email, "I don't think this attempt at negative campaigning will work, especially because Iowa has such an important place in the history of Islam in America, especially the Cedar Rapids area. So one of the oldest, if not the oldest, mosques in the country finding its home in Cedar Rapids. So we'll see." And Trudy writing, "In all of the discussion about the mosque, it seems that no one has asked about the right to enjoy the enjoyment of private property. Will the guest please talk about this?"
A libertarian. I love it.
No, if I'm not mistaken, the original New York Constitution, instead of being life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, included as its great virtues life, liberty, and property. As many, it did many of the eastern
this
states.
This is embedded in our Constitution.
This is embedded in the state constitution.
So this is on private property, this Muslim community center.
Yep.
And so I guess you can stand up for it on those grounds, Arnie.
Well, and again, when Barack Obama sort of made his sort of fuzzy statement in sort of quasi-support but non-support, what he did say was, this is a New York issue. This is a zoning issue. This is a property issue. And that's ultimately what it is. It is all those things, because we are supposed to be blind to faith, blind to color, blind to all these things. And ultimately is, do you want to sell? Who wants to buy? Do you have the money? Does it fit in with zoning? Amen, we're done. and that's part of it. The other thing is that it turns out that within a couple of blocks of the World Trade Center, there are mosques. This area of New York, read the New York Times today, this area of New York was really the home of the original Arab and Muslim community in the city of New York. You know, and that's its history. You know, its history is this is where this ethnic group landed. You know, I'm Norwegian. My ethnic group landed in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. This ethnic group landed in this part of Manhattan. I mean, this is the difference in this country. You start there, but then you come to places like Iowa and Nebraska, and it is part of what's called the American dream.
I want to ask Bruce Gronbeck and you also, Arnie, if you think that the Democrats have, if the GOP or some part of the GOP is wielding this as a fear tactic, have the Democrats countered it effectively up to now with President Obama's statement, for example?
Well, I think that the President Obama was the perfect counter. It's not in my territory. It's local issue. When in doubt, make it a local issue, let it go, and defederalize it, which it certainly is. So I think that tactic works very well. Let's let the New Yorkers handle this. It's their problem or their promise. Secondly, I think in the constant appeal to diversity and to pulling a country together, not tearing it apart, will have some traction, though I'm not convinced that that argument will have a lot of traction in this particular election. And maybe when we look at some of the election results, if we get there, that may come back up again. I mean, it's a decent argument, though I'm not sure it's got maximum force right now.
Arnie, how do you see that the Democrats could have been more effective in this case? We've got about a minute before a break.
He could have been more effective, but I think you should go to your candidate for governor in Iowa and ask Mr. Branstad, if he talks about being a Christian, does that mean he rejects his mother, the Jew? Ask him. Because according to Ms. Lehman, you know, the only thing she can talk about is her Christianity. But maybe that's because that's all she knows. But your own candidate for governor knows something more than that. He has diversity in his family. Is he going to be asked to reject the faith of his mother because he's now a Christian? I don't think so. I think it's about respect, it's about tolerance, and it's about a celebration of coming to God, whoever your God is.
Arnie Arnes. That's
really what Barack Obama should be talking
about. Amen.
Arnie Arnes and Bruce Gronbeck, stand by. We'll be back with more of our political discussion on The Exchange for this Wednesday. New Hampshire political analyst Arnie Arneson with us, political communications analyst Bruce Gronbeck with us. When we come back, well, a host of other things. We do want to get to this hour as we leave the controversy of the Muslim Community Center in New York City on the side. We'll talk about the primaries briefly. We'll talk about former Governor Branstad's now the candidate for governor, of course, his economic development plan, perhaps egg recall and the stem cells through a political lens. When we come back, we want to get your opinions on those. 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We'll come back in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. And I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Thursday, we talk about a Canadian company's hostile takeover attempt of Casey's General Stores. Casey's is based in Ankeny and operates more than 1,500 convenience stores. We'll discuss what Casey's is doing to defend itself and how the Canadian company is fighting back. Later in the hour tomorrow, a conversation about business philanthropy and how businesses decide what to sponsor. Tomorrow on The Exchange. Today, of course, Wednesday, it's Politics Day here on The Exchange. We'd like you to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Number of things to churn through in the remaining minutes, the remaining half hour of our program, the primaries, and Challenger Branstad's economic development plan. We want to talk about that in a few minutes. And we have with us this week Arnie Arneson, New Hampshire political analyst, and Bruce Gronbeck, political communications analyst. And let's talk about the primaries. briefly, let's go to Arnie Arneson. Out there in the East, what races did you find most interesting?
Well, in the state of Vermont, it was sort of, you know, Tweedledum and Tweedledee. There were five really sort of competent candidates running for governor on the Democratic side, only one running on the Republican side, and it is a dead heat, and it'll be a couple of days before we know what's happening with the Democrats because they're like a couple of hundred votes apart. But the most interesting race, I think, obviously, is Senator John McCain, and he's not out east, but he seems to have been out east since he ran for president, so he slept with us. And what I do have to say is he must be grateful that he ran for president because he had all that extra cash that he could use in this primary, because he spent more money on this primary than I think he's ever spent on all his campaigns put together. So that tells you how, one, frightened he was, and how unsure he was what the political landscape was about. Even though he has been a household name forever, he has run for president, and yet this is such an interesting year. But obviously that investment turned out to be a wise investment because he won by a comfortable margin. But the fact that John McCain was so frightened and had to spend so much money tells you that 2010 is an insecure place for a lot of people.
Bruce Gronbeck, your comment, for instance, how this primary tells us about the Tea Party and the GOP.
Well, I don't know that it tells us an awful lot yet, but give us some time in Alaska and maybe it will.
Not quite sure what the outcome is there.
The Alaska race is still obviously wide open and will be until the absentee ballots are counted. And Lisa Murkowski, I thought, had a good reputation in the Senate and had done a lot of work and spent time talking both about her willingness to work with good ideas from any party, as well as how much she towed the line on the GOP slate, and yet she is in trouble from a Tea Party submarine. So I think that is certainly one of the elections. There certainly was talk that McCain's opponent Hayworth would get Tea Party support. But his margin of victory was I think wide enough so that especially in a state where other Republicans such as Dan Quayle's very own son Ben Quayle were winning and getting healthy votes. So I think it doesn't tell us a lot about the Tea Party force yet.
Of course,
but it does say something about money. I just have to go. Don't forget Florida, because again, what was interesting in Florida was the gazillionaire lost on the Democratic side, but the gazillionaire acquired the Republican nomination on the Republican side. So you see this guy named Jeff Green, who is running? He's running for Senate, I think it is. And he spent an enormous amount of money, but his problem was his yacht.
That's right.
And at some point in time, if your yacht is seen in all these interesting places around the world, and you claim not to understand how it got there, you have a problem.
Okay. We've got a few other things to cover. But let's leave the primaries to the side for right now. Coming up, of course, at 1 o'clock on Wednesday. Coming up in just a few minutes, the political junkie from NPR News on the first hour of Talk of the
Nation. He'll get to the yacht.
He'll get to the yacht. A lot more
details. And the $36 million that Rick Scott spent
on those primaries. Let's talk about former Governor Branstad's economic development plan here, calling Iowa's economic development agency dysfunctional and scandal-ridden. The Republican gubernatorial candidate, Branstad, has said he'd replace it with a new public-private partnership. Branstad says that Iowa needs fewer, more focused programs to attract business. Our current toolbox, he says, is an alphabet soup of programs that many find confusing and complex. Democratic Governor Chet Culver says the plan shows Branstad is out of touch because the state already partners with private companies to recruit and retain the jobs they provide. Bruce Gronbeck, first to you. What do you think of this move?
Well, I mean, for me, one of the ironies, of course, is that when Vilsack originally set up the Department of Economic Development with Mike Bluhin running it, that Bluhin wanted to do partnerships, and the Republicans in the state resisted significantly because this could lead to conflicts of interest because this outfit is giving grants, economic development grants. As well. And, of course, what experience in Indiana shows that that's precisely what happened, that Indiana by now with the same kind of partnership program has gotten into great difficulties because it can't release private tax information about awardees.
So a lack of transparency, that criticism. Well, as a matter of fact,
well, it's not just transparent. I mean, that's a real problem.
I wanted to play a little comment by Branstad that was given yesterday as he addressed this criticism, the non-transparency criticism that has been leveled at this public-private partnership.
Well, I wouldn't go to Arizona in the winter.
Not quite the right cut. Let's try this cut right now.
There, in my early time as governor, there may have been a time or two where that happened because, people would ask me the question, I'd give them an honest answer. But sometimes I've learned to say, well, I really can't talk about that yet. We will give you that information when we can. But, so I've learned, there's a difference between being very open and honest and disclosing information prematurely that could cause the deal not to go through. That's the voice of experience.
Okay, former Governor Terry Branstad there. Arnie, you wanted to chime in on this issue.
Well, I mean, everybody wants a strong and vibrant economic development office. There's no question about it. But, of course, there are a lot of businesses in Iowa that say, excuse me, I'm here. What about me? I mean, it's one thing about attracting people from Arizona and from Nevada and from Kansas to come to Iowa, but there also is a way of growing homegrown businesses. And the idea of the public-private partnership, I believe if you look on the Economic Development Board in Iowa, there are people from every walk of business life on that board. So there is investment, there is oversight, there is this constant outreach to the private sector because you're trying to attract private sector jobs. Mm-hmm. You don't have to necessarily say public-private. Just look at what you have now, and it is an example of public-private. I think transparency is an absolute problem. But the other thing I want to remind everyone is that we had this big kick towards privatization. In fact, the U.S. military was an example of that kick towards privatization, the public-private partnership. And now we see Mr. Gates pulling back on that private experience, saying he's not quite sure that it ended up coming to the kind of results they were looking for when they were trying to make sure they were making the wisest investment. So it sounds good, but sometimes in practice it turns out not to be successful.
Okay.
That doesn't mean you don't want to work with the private sector. It just means that you need to figure out where they should be in this pivotal relationship.
Okay, very quickly before we move on, we know that the economy is, if not the issue, a primary issue for the coming election. When you have a program that focuses on economic development, that addresses that chief worry, will we have traction among Iowa voters in the coming election on this? Will this work for Branstad?
I don't know that it will, because economic development is pie in the sky down the road when you can see the sky better. And right now, I think for Iowans as well as most citizens across the country, it's what are you doing for me now? And I don't think economic development per se is an issue, a political issue that's going to get much traction.
Okay. Arnie, anything to add on to that before we move on?
Amen.
Okay. Nope. Let's move on to an issue that emanates, that has come from Iowa and has become a national issue of 600 million of them so far. As a matter of fact, Politico reports experts and lawmakers are now saying the Senate's year-long failure to pass a food safety overhaul has hampered the ability of the Obama administration to quickly recall the 600 million eggs connected to a salmonella outbreak that has sickened nearly 2,000 people. The House approved its version of the food safety bill in July 2009. That was more than the 60 recalls of the Food and Drug Administration regulated products ago. That's according to a report by the Make Our Food Safe Coalition. The Senate dragging its feet here. What are the political repercussions of this egg recall, if any? Are we going to be talking in the fall about food safety, about big corporate agriculture and so forth, Bruce Gombeck?
Well, we've been talking about peanut butter. We've been talking about lettuce. We've been talking about tomatoes. About time we got around to eggs. Can finish that.
We need a balanced diet, right?
We have to get some protein in that salad, right? That the I mean, the centerpiece of the difficulty is that the FDA, in most kinds of instances, cannot mandate a recall. It can only recommend one. And it does not have the teeth to move directly and start gnawing on that thing right away.
And this comes as a shock to Americans, to analysts, that why wouldn't the FDA have that ability? Oh, well, let's just suggest it.
Because the producers, of course, don't want it, right? And I think an interesting argument is developing that tying food and nutrition regulation and advice and everything else to agriculture per se, to the folks that produce the commodities that are turned into food, makes it a very difficult regulatory process.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that is, you got to be able to have somebody besides the beef producers and the egg producers determining regulations.
Well, the New York Times did a really interesting article where they talked about everyone's area of oversight and expertise. The FDA did this, you know, IR Agriculture did that, but it turns out that nobody was responsible for actually overseeing the Iowa egg producer farm himself. So there was no history of the FDA with this farmer. I mean, that's part of the problem. You have these multi-level of bureaucracy. Everyone has a tiny little piece of the action that says egg. Mm-hmm. But nobody has the responsibility to actually look.
Okay.
And that's problematic. And we have a 70-year-old food safety law. 70 years old. Someone go out and get their Betty Crocker cookbook from 70 years ago and read it. It sounds very different than how we sort of cook today and eat today. And that tells you that it has been very difficult and long in coming.
Okay, let's reach out to our exchange listeners if they want to chime in on talking about the politics of eggs. 1-866-780-9100. Also, stem cell research we want to get to if you have an opinion on that. 1-866-780-9100. The exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Before we do move on to stem cells, let's talk about this food safety issue, this egg recall. And Bruce, you listed the litany of other foods that have come up here. Does this cut one way or another to benefit one of the major political parties? Have you seen any ways that the political parties are using it to their advantage?
No, because they're all tap dancing. Both of them are tap dancing because of especially, of course, with our Supreme Court decision on corporate contributions, they could be even in further jeopardy.
Yeah.
That the monster, say, commodity organizations wield a tremendous amount of power. In Iowa, we know about the pork producers and their power and the beef producers and their power and the grain cartels and everything else that ADM owns the world in this state. You know, and when you begin to think about that or listening to the radio yesterday, you know, right now we're down to about 500 major egg producers in the whole country. That's an amazing.
And I was in our news yesterday, we brought out the words of Senator Grassley. He was talking about an over-reliance on big ag and too much of a consolidation, perhaps a surprising comment coming from longtime agriculture representative.
But our man who sees himself as a small farmer, right?
Sees himself. Yeah, Arnie.
I mean, locavores. I mean, all the locavores are out there going,
yes.
But there's an upside to this mass production, which is cost, because you can bring certain costs down. The problem is, for example, is that we also have to look around the world and see what the world has done. And there's an article today in the paper that talks about in England, they have gotten rid of almost entirely salmonella. There has not been a salmonella outbreak in eggs for many, many years. Why? Because they gave the chickens a certain kind of booster shot or whatever it's called, and as a result, they've literally wiped it out. Well, that has been discussed in the United States, but they said there wasn't sufficient proof. Well, the last time they discussed doing this with chickens was 1999. We're talking 2010, and science has leapfrogged over so many of the old prescriptions to where we are today. So again, we need a stronger FDA. We need to look at what has been successful around the world. And just because it happens in England doesn't mean it can't be embraced here. And it could be a win-win strategy. Produce lots of eggs, but don't worry about what the chickens produce because salmonella basically has been eliminated.
Quickly, before we move on to this, a quick comment about the stem cell ruling. Let's talk to Susan in Grinnell about the eggs. Susan, sorry.
That's all right. My comment is that this is due to factory farming, in my opinion. We didn't have this industrialized agriculture you know, 70 years ago, and that we've shifted the focus from the site of where how animals and how food is grown or produced to safe handling, and that we need to think about not stressed out animals, better conditions in these places, and also it's the centralization. So there's one problem, and it's now 50,000 hens that are affecting heaven only knows how many people. And if it was one problem on one farm, you know, there were five people.
Right.
So it's really, that's one problem. And the other thing is that we just need to not focus on the salmonella because it's going to be something else. You know, it's E. coli, it's salmonella. We shouldn't fixate on this. We should fixate on why we're suddenly seeing these outbreaks and make sure that we have humane and sanitary conditions. The other last thing I want to say is that we need to focus on when we have legislation, make sure it doesn't impact the very farmers that are doing responsible farming and small-scale farming, and instead, you know, look at these factory conditions.
Very good. Suzanne, thank you from Grinnell. Grabus, Grombeck, right, quickly.
The legislation on the horizon is all the legislation on cage size, for one thing, and on the handling of both chickens and the eggs, different kinds of washing and sanitation conditions. So that legislation is there, and this may give us the push to finally get on the agenda.
And they also put out, we're a nation built on the concept of local control. We like to have a sense that we have some ownership over our power, over the food we eat, and we've lost that. And I think what's happening now with this too big to fail and what happened with the two egg farmers in Iowa is beginning to make the point that maybe things have gotten too far from us and that there is some value to bringing it closer to home. It may be safer. You may have a relationship. It won't spread like wildfire, like what just happened with the eggs. The recall was almost all over the country. I think it goes back to our original values, which really did look at local and say, you know what, I want to maintain that relationship.
Okay, less than 5 minutes left in our hour. I wanted to have our analysts comment on the stem cell ruling on Monday. A federal district judge blocked President Obama's 2009 executive order that expanded embryonic stem cell research, saying it violated a ban on federal money being used to destroy embryos. The ruling came as a shock to scientists at the National Institutes of Health, also at universities across the country. They viewed it as a settled law in his ruling. The chief judge of the Federal District Court for the District of Columbia wrote that his temporary injunction returned federal policy to the status quo. What are the political implications of this ruling, Arnie?
Well, I think the judge was correct, although I hate the decision. Because if you read what the law was written under President Clinton, the law is very, very explicit. It basically says if this causes the destruction of an embryo, you cannot do research and we will not fund it. And they created all this interesting bifurcation and creativity. You know, under Bush, it was the 21 existing lines. Under Obama, it was, well, not exactly. We can expand it. And they all did this sort of interesting dance, but all of it really undermined the law. What needs to happen is Congress needs to change the law. I think this is a political issue. I don't think it's a judicial issue. And I think you go back to Congress and say, rewrite it. This does not reflect what good science is. We need to change the stem cell law in this country. It'll be provocative, but it is about the law. It is not about the interpretation.
Bruce Grombeck, your read.
I agree that where we got in the situation we're in because of the opinion of Harriet Robb under Clinton that it
right.
did not apply to private funding of research. Now, the Bush administration pulled that in and said, no, it does, and that's the existing lines. But the Obama administration opened private funding back up. And whether or not that is a true or a bad reading of the 96 law, I agree the decision was good. And I think there might even be votes to carry this through, the revision through.
You think so? I'm wondering if realistically we can expect this presidency and after the fall elections with fewer seats in both houses, it's predicted to
– This is very interesting because a lot of Republicans actually believe in this.
Yep.
Because this is about science, this is about health, this is about saving lives. There's a lot of opportunity out here. The rest of the world is doing this experimentation. The rest of the world is moving forward. If you want to be able to compete from a health perspective, let alone save lives, You need to rethink it. The judge is not the problem. It is the fact that we've had to interpret in a way that undermines the law, change the law.
I wonder if public perception has moved on since George W. Bush campaign against Barack Obama, in which this was a prominent issue. If public perception has moved on, Bruce,
well, Brown. I think by now when we say not start talking about dead babies and start talking about Parkinson's, diabetes, vaccines, viruses, lung disease, you start ticking through the things that are plaguing your family. I think the appeal of stem cell research becomes much, much more palatable to the public.
Arnie Arneson, we have about 30 seconds left. Your final comments on this issue?
My final comment is the people that sued were people that only do adult stem cells.
Yep.
They said it's not a level playing field. You've taken away our ability to make our living. So this was all about money for them. So I just want to remind you, it wasn't even about life. It wasn't about the law. It was like, wait a minute, we have this open territory. We now have competition. We don't want the competition. I love it.
Okay. Arnie Arneson, I want to thank you very much, New Hampshire political analyst. It's great to have you with us for this week's Politics Day here on The Exchange. Thank you, Arnie.
Thank you.
And, of course, thanks to Bruce Gronbeck, political communications analyst, joining us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Iowa City. Bruce Gronbeck, thank you for coming in today.
A pleasure.
And The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. We had production assistance today from Lindsay Moon, technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.